Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of Marek Makes a Movie, the podcast where I talk to filmmakers about their experiences making films in an effort to learn something before I make my own film. How am I going to be able to afford to do that? With kind donations from you, the listeners. So far, I've raised £630. You can see what I've spent that on and how things are going by going to mareklarwood.com/Marek Makes a Movie. And there's all information and a blog on there. And I'll shortly be putting up a lens test of a lens I bought to make the film. I mean, if you like that sort of stuff, look on there. If you don't, you probably won't like the rest of this. Anyway, this episode, I spoke to the lovely David Spearing. He is part of a sketch group called Broken Toaster, whose stuff is on YouTube. And they are absolutely brilliant. And I helped make their Kickstarter campaign, which was sadly unsuccessful, but there's some brilliant sketches on there. One of my favorites is the Freddie Mercury one, which we talk about later on in the episode. David himself works for the group you may know as McFly, and he directed the feature documentary McBusted Tour Play, and he's also directed lots of other music videos and films. When he talks about Drew and Ben in the podcast, he's talking about members of the sketch group Broken Toaster. Anyway, he said lots of interesting things, and I must apologise about the echoey nature of the room we're in. It's just my rubbish recorder, so it sounds as though you're listening to us in a prison cell. If you want to imagine that, you can. Anyway, enough about my nonsense. Here's the blooming podcast. It's Marek Makes a Movie. What's it about? I'll tell you. Talking to filmmakers about stuff. Editing. Camera work. Directing. Acting. All sorts. Mainly bullshit. Well, I'm here in David's office in London, next to a fire station. I shouldn't give that away, should I? Some people can track you down and murder you now.
I always say it's opposite the curtain. I always forget about the fire station. I just, because I only see the cinema. But yeah, now I'm going to have assassins on my doorstep.
This is a really good location. Now, I met you when I did a Kickstarter for Broken Toaster, sketch group. And you are a writer, director and editor. I've done all sorts. How did you first get into this blooming business?
Well, I went to... I studied it at college and at, like... But mainly only because I didn't really do very well on my GCSEs.
So I was drugs and stuff.
Yeah. going to the drugs. And I had to kind of figure out, like... I just had to pick something that I was interested in. And I'd always kind of had a video camera when I was younger, and I used to film and make, like, you know, we used to do our own version of Jackass, and we used to, like, film each other skating and stuff like that. So I've always had, like, a camera. So I kind of got, I just thought, I'd try media studies, even though it's like a kind of, you know, dust subject. But I really enjoyed the course. I had a really inspiring teacher, and he kind of got me into film a lot more. And so I, you know, I studied it through college and uni. And then I was kind of lucky enough to sort of, someone in my class at uni was working in for this production company who had done a lot of stuff with McFly in the past, and they were looking for a new director, and she just put my name down on the list because she remembered me. And then so I went for an interview, and then kind of had a little trial run with McFly when they were sort of doing their last album, filmed a little bit in a studio, and then got the job with them. So I kind of worked with them for 8 years now. So I started off behind the scenes, you know, just literally had like, I had a mini DV camera, like a Sony V1.
Yeah.
And then started buying DSLRs when they came out, and then I just sort of did behind the scenes stuff and kind of worked up to doing music videos and tour documentaries and concert films and that kind of thing. And then, yeah, that's kind of, that's my way in, like kind of way I got into it.
What's it like? Because loads of the best sort of more interesting filmmakers start off doing, I've seen people who start doing were skating videos first of all.
Yeah.
And then because they have to do skating videos, they have to work out how to sort of pull focus really fast and work out how to do slow-mo and do these shots, because the sport has almost dictated how that is really challenging to film. But when you do music videos, it must be a hard, I imagine it a really difficult genre to do.
Yeah, it is. I've done loads, but I wish I'd done some more, but like they're always quite challenging, because you kind of, you get given a song, and then they're just like, right, you know, you don't really get much of a brief a lot of the time, unless, you know, an artist is like really into it, and then you just kind of have to just have an idea and pitch it, and which is always hard. And I've always read stuff with kind of directors that always say, you just got to keep filling your tanks, you just got to keep, anytime you're not working, just inspire yourself and just have these ideas, so you know that any point you've got to do a treatment, you can write something, you know, and just pull ideas. And maybe I've got stuff I've written years ago that would be treatments for ideas, and you submit them, and then it's like, no, and then they all just go into a drawer, and then you know that like one day you go, oh wait, that might work, and then you bring it out and use it for something new, you know.
The old notebook things are great. I've just got tons and tons of awful notebooks where I go through all the ideas I could barely even read. But that's when the best stuff comes out of them, just taking an old idea and then having a new idea to combine those two ideas, so you seem really creative. When you're doing your comedy stuff with Broken Toaster, I always feel really bad for you, because just you're doing things. I don't know if we did the Kickstarter video with you. I was in.
Yeah.
It was just you and one lighting guy.
Yeah, Raph. Yeah.
Doing the whole thing. What's it like sort of doing things with a sort of skeleton crew? Do you have to be really sort of hyper prepared? And what are the challenges you face doing that?
It's very stressful. First of all, that's the main thing. But I don't know, it's kind of like, I'm torn. It's kind of like, it's freeing in one way, but then it's ultra stressful in the other way. And like, you know, Raph came in at a later point, but when we first started doing Broken Toaster, it was literally just me, Ben and Drew, and like, so I'm the whole crew, you know, and because we'd all kind of brainstorm together, write together, and it'd always be our ideas to start, and then we kind of go on to set, and then I'm everyone. I'm the sound guy, I'm the camera guy, I'm directing, and it's just kind of like...
It's almost impossible. It's so, and actors never realise how much stuff there is to think about with even like monitoring. So I've made mistakes before, just thinking I'm monitoring the sound and just messing up the tape by not recording the sound.
It's
just too much to do.
Yeah, I've done that in the past, because especially if I'm using like a camera that doesn't have sort of built-in audio, and I've got the Zoom recorder on top, it's so easy just to kind of like start the camera rolling, and then you're like halfway through a take, and you're like, oh shit, and like just make some excuse. You hope that the actors mess up in some way. Oh, okay, we'll do another one. Or you're like,
I just want more lighting. We bet on your lines for that one. Never tell the actors.
Got to keep it cool.
Now, what's your favourite part of doing it then? Do you actually like the editing better than the actual filming?
I'm not a massive fan of editing. Like, I do it out of necessity, and I enjoy it in some, you know, some circumstances when it's like, you know, we're making like a really nice film or some kind of like, you know, fiction piece. But generally, it's quite, you know, boring, but fun, but still boring. But I prefer, my favourite thing out of everything I do is like, would always be on any shoot, is like when you have this really stressful day and you're just shooting all day and it's really hard. I love that night time when you finish and you all sit down together and you watch the rushes, that's like the best thing. That's what I live for. Like, that's kind of like, that's always been the best thing of Broken Toast, that we'd always like, because we would have mental shoots and we'd be stressing and shouting at each other and going crazy, and then we'd all sit down in the night and we'd watch the rushes and be like, oh man, it's all worth it, you know. So that's what you do it for. So that's my favourite bit.
My favourite of your Broken Toaster film, which you can watch on YouTube, I think it's a Freddie Mercury one.
Well, that one was particularly like mental. Like, we could have made a film about the making of that one, because it was just like, it was ridiculous. We got locked out of the car at one point, and then, you know, I had to kind of look after the camera grid whilst Ben and Drew were running down to this local hotel addressed as Freddie Mercury, or two Freddie Mercuries, like to try and get help and stuff, and we had to call like a locksmith out, and
oh no.
And we went to stay at Drew's house. Drew had just bought a house in Barnsley, where he's from, and we all were sleeping on the floor there, because it has just been like brand new, you know, just done fresh, and Ben forgot his sleeping bag, so he's all like just literally sleeping on the floor like homeless people, and you know, trying to shoot scenes in fields where we were getting eaten by midges and stuff. It was just like, it was a very adventurous shoot and very stressful.
How many days did that take then?
That was, I think, two days, or like one evening and then a couple of days. But yeah, it's very, we normally do like a long weekend, you know, like
yeah,
2 days, or yeah, maybe a little bit of Friday as well, but yeah, it's hard.
And what is the difference between directing things like you directed the McBusted film about their tour?
Yeah.
And how is that? I mean, obviously it's massively different. What's that like compared to doing directing sort of big sort of, well, sort of feature film compared to doing the shorts? And what other skills do you need?
Well, I think they're very different sort of things. Like, you know, obviously I started off, I guess, in documentary, and I think documentary, I think, is really good for teaching you how to kind of craft a narrative, because you don't have anything. You know, you start with, you can have a concept of what you want it to be, but you essentially have no control over what's going to happen. So a lot of it's waiting around and filming just endless amounts of footage, and then that's the editing I'm talking about, when you finally get into the edit for that, and you've got like hundreds of hours, and you go, right, I need to start making a story now. That's really hard, and you know that. But that, again, I mean, all the documentary stuff and that was all just me and the camera with the band. But then the stuff when we're doing the concerts, like we did Hyde Park and O2 Arena, and like that's like the biggest I've ever done. That's like, that's when there's so many people on the set that it's just insane. You know, you just have so many people there that are helping you kind of put it together, and you kind of have like, you know, massive OB truck where you're just sat there and you've got sort of 10 cameras and it's live and you're kind of shooting it and you're in charge of every single camera, and it's very scary. Like, my first ever one was live at Albert Hall for McFly's like 10th anniversary concert, and I remember just like, because you're watching it all before the concert, you've got like 10 cameras on the screen, and you think, okay, I got this. And then like when the concert starts and then every camera starts moving and the band are moving and the music's playing, I just remember kind of just freezing like a deer in headlights. So I was like, oh shit, and like had to take this big breath, and then I just started talking to the cameras, but it's very scary.
It's a proper vision mix, sort of.
Yeah.
Sort of. I mean,
yeah.
I've done before, when we did studio, I think I was on a sketch group, we did a studio sitcom, and they would only employ someone who'd done studio before,
yeah,
just because it was a six camera shoot or something, and they try and mix it, they do a sort of edit, don't they, when they do a sort of rough edit when
yeah,
they're doing
line cut.
Yeah. So they had literally two directors to choose from who did comedy, because no one else had the skills
yeah, yeah.
to do it, because it was so expensive that you couldn't really, you know, fuck it up.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it had to be done that night. So which do you prefer then?
I prefer like short films, drama, like fiction. That's what I want to be doing. That's what I struggle to make now, you know, crew wise and budget wise. And like, so I want to kind of be doing those big crew, big budget shoots, but in the sort of fiction world. So like, you know, I love all the tour stuff and the music stuff, but I feel like I've done, not everything, but I've done, you know, I've been satisfied in the kind of work I've done in that area, and I just really want to get into making more fiction, which I have to struggle to make at the moment and make off my own back, which is fine, you know, that's because, you know, I'm passionate about it, so it's kind of, that's okay.
Yeah.
But I just want to kind of get to that point now where I can do that sort of full time and, you know, live off of that, you know.
What, and how do you make your stuff look so good? It's all in the lighting, I suppose.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I guess, I mean, We use, so I use Shure and FS7 a lot, and
that's A7S. For camera geeks, it's the Sony FS7 and the Sony A7S II, or the Sony A7S II?
I've got the two.
Which is pretty much all the filmmakers' dream cameras at the moment, aren't they, I suppose.
Yeah, complete camera porn. But I don't know what it is, like, I guess I know with Broken Toast stuff and with stuff I do, I love film and I love, like, cinema, so it's kind of like, you know, I'm always coming from a point of view of, like, trying to shoot something really beautifully, you know, and just trying to make it look nice as much as I can. And then, you know, and then underneath that, we've got some weird, crazy story, or it's like some dark comedy. And I think that's what made us kind of good, is that those kind of combinations of those things. But I have good lighting now because I work with, you know, there's a guy called Raph who Drew once brought in to help us out when we did Stakeout, this Broken Toaster short, and he worked with us then, and I've kind of worked with him ever since. So, like, I work with him on all my sort of paid work as well, and, you know, because he'd always just come and just work for free. He was at uni, he'd come and help out for free, work all these hours for us for nothing, and so I was like, oh god. So I tried to get him as much paid work as I can, just to kind of, so we could keep on taking advantage of him for Broken Toaster. But he's great, you know, and he is now sort of my DP that I use a lot of the time.
And how do you get good at lighting? I mean, how do you teach yourself lighting?
Well, I guess there's basic principles of lighting, you know, like that are used, you know, like key light, soft light.
Yeah, also 3-point lighting, so yeah.
Those kind of basics that you learn, but then a lot of it's just kind of, you know, style and what you're trying to say. Like, it's always story, it always comes back to story. And we're always, like, my preparation for doing a short film or anything in that sense is I'd always do a shot list that we kind of, you know, we kind of stick to it. Me and the DP will work closely on. And
do you storyboard it, or do you just do?
No, I've never really storyboarded, mainly because I can't really draw, so it'd just be stickmen.
And it takes ages as well, storyboarding, isn't it?
Yeah, I've done it once for a bigger shoot when we sort of remade a little bit of Back to the Future. So we had, like, a DeLorean and, like, chase vehicles. And I think in that instance, I thought, right, I need to storyboard this because it's like, you've got to tell everyone what you're doing, and there's cars, and it's like a big kind of thing. So I didn't draw it. I used this program called, I can't remember, like SourceForge or StoryForge. It's something that's like a digital program where you have models.
Oh, great.
So you have a camera in a space you can move around, and you can put, like, really basic, like, 3D models in and set pieces.
Oh, great. And StoryForge.
StoryForge.
Oh. You're fine. Google it. Google it yourself.
I don't know. I can't remember what it's called. But I used it for that, and you just take up screenshots, and that's kind of essentially a storyboard. But yeah, normally I just do shot lists and then mood boards. Mood board's a big thing for me. Like, I always kind of, because it's, I think what I'm trying to learn of being a director is, I think you have, like, getting your vision across is, like, one of the hardest things. You've got to get everything out of your head that you're thinking and tell everybody else, so you're all on the same page. You've got to be making the same film. So I try and do a mood board, which is just a few pages worth of, like, visual references, you know. So if I think, oh, it's like this film, I want that to look like that, and I just do, you know, whether it's like colour palettes or anything like that, I just do that. And then, so I guess some of the lighting we do is just trying to copy films we like and copy moods that kind of tell a story or help the scene, you know.
That's great. And what are you, what sort of lenses do you use then in your FS7? Are you,
I've got a mixture. I've got a Canon 2470 sort of, you know, photographic lens. I've got some Sigma art lenses, which are really nice, like really fast lens. They're like 1.4, so they're really fast. I've got some of my dad's old, like, Yashica lenses from his old, like, camera, stills camera, which are really nice. They got, like, a kind of quirky look, but they're really nice.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Those are the main ones they use, yeah.
You can get, I spend far too much time looking up gear on the internet and looking up camera reviews.
Same.
That's the worst thing. It's when I was writing, I used to like stationery and empty pens and empty notebooks, which was a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
Now I just look up cameras and think, I've only got a camera.
That's one of the best hobbies, though. I love it. One of my goals in life is just thinking every day, like, how can I afford to buy red? Like, what can I do to buy red?
Yeah.
But then, you know, but it's all silly in the grand scheme of things because it doesn't matter what camera you have. It's obviously how you use it and what your sort of what story you're telling. Like, you know, people make films on iPhones now, so it doesn't really matter. I mean, it does to an extent. Obviously, it's a real like film geek sick lego to tell straight away the difference in quality. But most people don't know, you know. Like, I'll be like, oh, look at that, and then people are like, oh, yeah, it looks the same to me.
I remember saying I went to see a film called, what was the film called? Stoker. It was called at the cinema with a friend, and then there were company. I mean, remember thinking. It was soft focus so many times during the film.
Oh, really?
That I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I thought, this is weird. The focus put that must have been
sacked.
Because this is one of the worst focus put in I've ever. You know, like soft in countless times. And I said to my friend after, I said, I just couldn't concentrate because it was just soft all the time.
Yeah.
And she said, what do you mean? Didn't even notice it at all.
And that's the thing, yeah, people don't really see it. I had that with, I went to see Hereditary.
I'm going to go and see it. Like, is it as horrific as everyone says?
Yeah, it is. It is like, yeah, I really enjoyed it. There's some bits that like niggle at me, but like I think in general, like I loved it. It's very like, you know, like The Shining, very kind of considered and slow and like, you know, amazing like camera work and stuff. But there's one scene in that where it was really, I won't say what the scene is, but it was really intense moment between these two characters. But the one of the characters' singles was just so like soft that it was so blurry the whole time. And I was just like, it's really annoying me because they kept cutting, but they kept using it. They must have just had nothing else to use. And I was just like, just put it in.
Yeah.
It's time for a little break. Just relax. Let's get back to it.
So what's your plan then to make, if you were going to do a feature, what are you just doing short films and then building up to try and do a feature eventually? Or
I want to kind of get a few nice sort of features under my belt that I'm kind of happy with. You know, I've made quite a few, but I'm very tough on myself, and I don't know what it is I'm looking for, but I think I'm trying to get to some level, I don't know what it is, but something that I can make where I kind of like it a lot or a bit. You know, I never like what I make anyway. I don't think you should, maybe, but like, I'd be happy and like and content with it for a moment. But then I kind of like, I'd always find fault in it, and then that kind of drives me then to do my next one. And like, I guess I want to make a few that I kind of like enough, and then build up to doing a feature, which may not be harder, because I find shorts are harder because no one wants to invest. You know, there's no return. No one's going to put money into a short. Because really it's only a calling card for a director or for an actor. It's not really any money to be made there. Whereas like, at least in a feature, you can get people to invest, and then maybe there's some return if you get some distribution or anything like that. But yeah, I want to just keep on plugging away and trying to get some more shorts made.
If you were giving someone tips about what you've learned about directing and working with people, like technical tips or just tips of working with actors, what sort of things would you say? What are the lessons that you've learned?
Preparation is always, that's the biggest thing, I think. Like, you know, it's like I said, stuff like storyboards or shot lists, whatever one you want to do, and mood boards. I think like that's one of the biggest things. The more prepared you are in everything leading up to it, then the easier it goes on the day, you know, because there's nothing worse than getting on set and then just no one knowing what's going on. And as director, you have to have like all the answers. You know, you have to be the one person who knows everything that's going on and what it is you've got to do. So preparation is the biggest thing, like just kind of getting that stuff lined up beforehand. On set, it's kind of hard. I mean, I don't think my experiences are very like normal, like, you know, because a lot of time, like when I'm the whole crew, like when we do these kind of these shorts, like, and there's not always time to kind of work about this load. So like I've been very lucky with like Ben and Drew from Broken Toaster, because they're like, they're just amazing. They just come on and they don't need much direction. I mean, we're all on the same page anyway, so it's kind of like they just come in and deliver. So it's like that, and that helps me because I don't have time to like, you know, I can't do all those jobs and then sit down and have a conversation about what this scene is and us all chatting together. So that kind of helps out there. But, you know, but in other stuff, you know, with actors, I think it's always about making them feel comfortable and you know, and just having conversations with like before every scene, just making sure everyone knows you're making the same film.
I think that what you're saying on the mood board is so important, and the tone of things. Because when you're going for auditions and you're going to auditions for a film or whatever, half the time you don't know what the tone is.
Yeah.
And that's crucial. And no one really says what the tone is. You're trying to guess it from a script or even from two pages.
Yeah.
And you get two goes at doing this thing and hope the tone's right. If they gave you a mood board or said, here's some references, or even some sort of taster tape of what it's like. And I suppose when you work with Broken Toaster, you all know the tone already, which is so important.
Yeah.
I mean, when you get the tone wrong, it's just, I've been on the other side where I've been auditioning people and thinking, oh, I wrote this part for you. But you've got the tone wrong.
Yeah.
And to do it, like I've seen you do this thing,
yeah,
but you need to sort of do this now in the right tone, otherwise I'm going to have to give it to some other prick.
Yeah. That's like when you came in, when we did the Kickstarter, and you're like, oh, how do you want me to play it? We're just like, we just want you to be you, like how you always are. Really funny. Just be really funny.
Yeah, it's difficult. Cool. And now, where can people see all your stuff? Is your website, davidspearing.com?
Yeah, that's probably where I mainly update most of my stuff that I've worked on. And Instagram I use a lot, which is at David Spearing. But I'm really bad with like social media and that kind of stuff. That's what I've always been bad at. I just enjoy making stuff, but I'm really bad at like telling people about it.
It's so much work, and also you feel quite... Whenever I put stuff out, I feel like an arsehole.
Yeah.
It's that horrible feeling, oh, I should promote this. I don't know if it's any good because I've got too close to it now, so I can't really tell.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, yeah, because that's what, you just get so close. Like, it's hard, for people don't really understand like how intense it is making stuff, and you just get so close to it, and you spend so long editing stuff and making it, and you're just like, I just can't tell what this is anymore. And you just hope, you know, you hope that you'll get good feedback. But even when you do, you're kind of like, I don't know if I trust what you're saying because I'm not sure. It's hard, the only way you can really get that kind of objective kind of view is to just wait a couple of years.
That's how long it takes, you about 2 years ago. Oh, that's quite funny.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was good. That's rubbish. Yeah.
You come back and just watch them all fresh and then critique it all.
Great. Well, thanks for your time, David. That's brilliant. Hopefully we'll work together on something soon. And thanks for your help, and that's about it. Hey, remember everyone, stay hygienic.
If you want to find out more about David Spearing, you can go to his website, davidspearing.com, or follow him on Instagram, at David Spearing, or Twitter, also at David Spearing. Well, that's it. Good luck, mate.
Marek. Mate. A movie.
Marek makes a movie.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.